Blog Talk Radio.
Self-respect, intellect, increasing our knowledge to keep ourselves in check. Positivity is all we need. Together we will succeed.
Massages, energy healing. If you want more information on how this can be beneficial for you, you can email me at tqmindbyrod@gmail.com. You can go on to the facebook.com/tqmind. You can even call 240-382-4733 for hours and availability. This is mobile massage on demand, so this is always sponsored by TQ Mind by Rod, Tranquil Mind by Rod, Massage and Wellness. So without further ado, we want to get into the topic today. What can Brown do for you? Today marks the 60th anniversary of the Supreme Court ruling Brown v. Board of Education. And like we know, Brown v. Board of Education was about the integration of schools. That's what a lot of people, you know, reflected on. They talk about that's what the particular ruling was about, but it's a lot more than that. So what we want to do in the show, we want to break down what Brown v. Board of Education really was about, how things have changed over the past 60 years, and have they changed for the better, or are things worse than what they were 60 years ago? Now think about this here. We're in 2014. This was done back in 1954. So 1954, you think about that, there's a lot of us that have family members, our parents, our aunts, our uncles that grew up in this time. There were school-age kids that had to endure inability to get that equal education. And when you think about equal education, it does not mean that the teachers were inferior, that the school structure was inferior to that of Caucasians. It was just the fact that there wasn't the funding available for those schools to be prosperous. And that's what Brown v. Board of Education really was about. Let's look back into time. Let's go back into that Jim Crow era. The Jim Crow era basically made it where if you were on a certain side of the tracks, if you were of a certain color, you were not going to get any benefits at all. And without those benefits, that made it very difficult for kids to focus on schooling because they had to get a job that they were in school. They weren't getting the adequate books. They were getting secondhand, third-hand books, torn books, books with missing pages in it. They weren't getting any busing. They had to walk 10, 12 miles of school to get there. You know, they weren't getting the adequate funding for any type of extracurricular activities that would develop their skills and their knowledge to go to a decent college or go to an adequate college or go into college with the adequate information that they need to be successful. Sometimes I don't like saying adequate college because all colleges can be adequate. It's just a matter of what you go in there and what you bring to the table when you go to that school. That's what the Jim Crow era created for a lot of people. So you look at the foundation of it was Plessy versus Ferguson, saying that the United States was separate but equal. So that way people of African descent had the same equal rights or equal amounts of opportunity as Caucasians. That's the way they made it separate. That's the way they were trying to make it separate but equal. But, of course, we all know that was not the case. So this is what Brown v. Board of Education was trying to debunk the whole Plessy versus Ferguson law. Now, that was 60 years ago. I'm going to take you back to even further time. I'm going to take you back 160 years ago. And 160 years ago, actually 165 years ago, around this particular time. So this historical events have been happening around this particular time, and a lot of people don't know about the smaller steps that were supposed to help build this particular topic. Brown versus Board of Education would probably have not have succeeded in the Supreme Court if it wasn't for this case back in 1849, Sarah Roberts versus the City of Boston. And this case here, Sarah Roberts was a five-year-old girl, kindergartner. Her parents were free, and they wanted their child to go to the top school in her area in Boston. And, of course, even though Boston abolished slavery back by the 1840s, even though Boston was considered a free area, quote-unquote, they wouldn't allow a person of African descent to go to their schools. So the case of Sarah Roberts versus the City of Boston was a fight to allow this five-year-old girl to start kindergarten in an all-white school. And according to that particular ruling, the City of Boston actually ruled in the favor of Sarah Roberts and her family, saying that because of the fact that she is free, she has the rights and abilities to go to wherever school she chooses to, even if the school is all-white. This was back in 1849, 165 years from today, and 100 years prior to Brown versus Board of Education. This is significant because of the fact that Brown versus Board of Education was supposed to provide an equal opportunity for students to get education, but the very last of the major cities that allowed these young African-American children to get the proper busing, to get the proper funding to go to the schools, was the City of Boston. Think about that in perspective when you think about Brown versus Board of Education. The one city that you would think would understand, the one city which became the first city to overturn a previous law saying that African-Americans could not get the proper education, was the last major city in this country to fight against desegregation. And you look at the stats now. The schools are just as segregated, almost identical to the amount that they were 60 years ago. So what has Brown done for us? Has it really been that stepping stone for good quality education? Has it really been a stepping stone for the proper education for our children? Let me know what you think. 347-850-1228. The phone lines are open right now. I want to know what you think about this particular topic and what the Brown versus Board of Education ruling actually has done for us. Once again, 347-850-1228. Or you can go on to Facebook.com, go on to my Facebook, at Rodney Stevenson. Let me know what you think about this particular topic. We'll be getting into a pretty good discussion today in regards to the segregated states. It was a really great topic. I threw a question out there. Just wanted to know if people knew what the most segregated state was in this country. And I just opened up talking about the Jim Crow era. I opened up talking about how a lot of times there was a disenfranchisement in the South. And then I mentioned how Boston was one of the last cities to desegregate. So it got people thinking, is whether the North or whether the South. Interestingly enough, a lot of people that posted on my particular profile, posted on this particular topic, mentioned Southern states. You know, I have Mississippi, I have Alabama, you know, I have right on the border with Maryland, we talked about Virginia, and even in the Midwest, we talked about a person mentioned Chicago and Illinois, how the Midwest was a really bad area, and the Midwest definitely, to this day, is still a very trying area when it comes down to segregation in Chicago and St. Louis and Detroit and Kansas City. All these places still have issues and battles with segregation. Missouri, in essence, Kansas City, one city, two different states, because they broke it down the color line. Kansas took the Caucasian side, Missouri took the African-American side, and that's how the city is split. The city is split based on racial segregation. And so that would obviously be a high choice for the most segregated state. But it's not. Some people may be surprised by this, but the most segregated state in the country, my girl Tiffany Frazier, she's the one that got it right off the bat, New York State. And it hurts me because the two most segregated areas are two areas that I can talk about firsthand, New York State and Washington, D.C. People know, the people who are listening to this show that grew up with me, that know about the situation in New York State, how a lot of us were separated based on color lines when it came down to elementary school, middle school, and high school. And this is not in the country parts of New York State. There's a lot of country parts. It's not in Syracuse. It's not in Binghamton. It's not in Elmira or Albany. This is right in the southeastern corridor of New York, the quote-unquote tri-state area of New York. Basically, the area, for those who are not familiar with the area right outside New York City and New York City itself are the key culprits when it comes down to educational segregation. So what does that mean? What is that doing for our children? Basically, what that's doing is that you're sectioning off your children to each little zoning. You know, the Irish are with the Irish, the Jewish are with the Jewish, the Muslim are with the Muslims, blacks are with the blacks, Hispanics are with the Hispanics. You know, and this is how New York City and the southeastern corridor of New York has been designed in order to keep those that are of certain ethnic groups, of certain colors, of certain races, in their own zone. You know, anecdotally, you look at the high schools there. You look at a school like John Jay High School in Fishkill, New York, where there's an influx of African-American and Hispanic kids that came down from the city. But when you, even within the school, a lot of those kids are segregated certain classes. Those classes that they know that they're in, they're all in it together. All 35, 40 of them will be in one class together while the Caucasian kids are in another class together. This is what we saw anecdotally. I'm sure things and times have changed a little bit now due to more of the increase of influx of African Americans and Latinos that moved to the southeastern corridor. But obviously, according to the study, things have not changed too much because the zoning, they rezone each and every time they come down north to make sure that there's not an imbalance of African-American students in the schools. They want to have a balance, and when they do have that balance, they're going to shut them off to a whole different side of the school, a whole different wing of the school, and these teachers aren't doing anything about it. That's the way New York State is lined up. Then you look at Washington, D.C. Washington, D.C. is number two on the list because of really one thing, white flight and white rebirth. That's what's making D.C. number two on the list. When you look at back in the 70s and 80s, start going even further back to when Brown versus Board of Education was signed back in 1954, what happened is a lot of the Caucasians that were living in D.C. in the 50s, they moved away. They felt that it was too much of a threat to have educated African people in their neighborhood, in their community, so they moved away. They moved out of Northwest D.C. They moved out of Northeast D.C., moved up to Montgomery County, moved out to Loudoun County, or Fairfax County, Alexandria. This is what they did to avoid being around educated African people. And that's what happened in New York City as well. The white flight, you see nowadays in the Hudson Valley, it's become more of an African-American buildup in Newburgh, in Poughkeepsie, in Beacon, in Wappinger Falls. There's more of a buildup, because a lot of the Caucasians are moving upward to Albany or Schenectady or even moving across the border to New Jersey to escape the influx of educated African-American people. So with that in mind, what does that do? What does that cause when it comes down to the structure of the educational system? What that does, in essence, and this is what the the head of the Justice Department, the Attorney General, Eric Holder, was talking about at the commencement speech in Morgan State. This is what President Obama has been talking about. This is what the First Lady Michelle Obama has been talking about. What this does is increase the disparity amongst the students. Basically, when the white flight happened, that was an opportunity for the government to really talk about the true law of Brown versus Board of Education. What Brown versus Board of Education did for us, what Brown did for us was basically allow an opportunity to a greater education, an opportunity to an education where there may be quality book, quality lunch, or quality service. So what they feel is that they're giving the quality by giving reduced lunches, giving proper books, giving opportunity to go online at times. And they feel that that's what Brown vs. Board of Education is doing to be successful. But when you look at it on other levels, staffing, one, when it comes down to staffing, there's a big disparity when it comes down to the level of African-American or Hispanic teachers in the community. I was doing massages at an elementary school for Teachers Appreciation Week. I don't want to name any names because I don't want to call anybody out there, but this is an elementary school, fairly new elementary school, about 15 years, but a very established elementary school. So looking at the pictures of the staff members over the past 4 years, I noticed a declining trend of African-Americans that work at the school. You say, why is that? That is the question. Why is it that there is a disparity when it comes down to teachers, but when it comes down to faculty and staff, there's a plenty of African-Americans and Hispanics in there. You know, basically, that's why I want to talk about faculty and staff. The faculty is dealing with the kids directly. The staff is the ones that are cleaning the floors, sweeping the floors, mopping, taking out the trash, things like that. Fine, plenty of African-Americans and Hispanics doing that, but when it comes down to Hispanics teaching or, you know, going over things with the children, that's when the problem arises because there's nobody there. That's happening in New York. That's happening in Washington, D.C. That's happening in a lot of urban areas in the country. They are ignoring the fact that their sibling is in danger. And not in danger just, you know, just educationally, socially, economically. There's just a way that people aren't paying attention to what's going on. And when you think about New York, you think about D.C., and you look at the opposite, what is the most integrated state, I should say, the most integrated state, people would not fathom this here. I know I definitely didn't when I first saw it, was West Virginia. And the reason why West Virginia is the least segregated state or the most integrated state is because social class trumps everything. It's all about the social structure of that state. Everybody's poor, so it doesn't matter. Everybody's poor. You know, you got poor whites, you got poor blacks, you got poor Hispanics. They're all living in that state together. And what they say is that, hey, we're all poor, and we're all going to be poor together, so let's go to the same schools so that we can figure out how to get out of this poverty. That's where the structure comes from, where West Virginia is the most integrated state. Flip that to New York, California, Washington, D.C. They have resources, but it's a matter of where they want to submit their resources. If I'm living in Washington, D.C., I'm not going to submit the resources in Southeast D.C. or Northeast D.C., where there's a predominant amount of African-American students that are going there and that are getting the education. No, I'm not going to funnel the money there. I'm going to take it up to the Capital District. I want to take it up to Adams Morgan. I want to take it up to DuPont Circle, these areas in Washington, D.C., where there's a very affluent young Caucasian population that are having kids, the young Caucasians in their 30s now, are having children that are just starting school, so all these new schools are being built, all these new avenues of technology are being supplied to these children, and you don't think that that causes a problem when it comes down to kids getting education? Of course it does, because they're not getting the resources that other schools are getting, that other ethnic groups are getting. So how do you respond to this? How do you respond to white flight? How do you respond to the rigorous social boundaries that are keeping our children down? There's a couple ways to do it. One is focusing on sending local funds to the schools. That's the way to do it. There's a lot of schools out there. One I do want to give a shout-out to, Ujamaa School of African Studies in Washington, D.C. Ujamaa School is completely privately funded and owned and operated by African-Americans for African-American students. That is what the school is all about. But does the school get the recognition that it deserves? Does the school get the funding that it deserves? No. So that's step one. We have to figure out how to finance these schools locally and properly fund these schools. So how do we do that? Comes with my second point, getting PTA involvement, getting involvement from the parents. Only way the only way that a school will thrive, the only way that a school will be successful, and, of course, the only way, in turn, that a child will be successful is if they have involvement from their parents. They got to have that PTA involvement, and there's no way around it. You can say, oh, you know, I don't have the time, I don't have the money, I can't do that. That's ridiculous. You have to make time for your children in order to make sure that their education is proper. If you do that and you make time for your children, then what they might do, they might voluntarily provide information to you, voluntarily let you know when there's homework or a test or a case study that they have to do. Instead of you having to scrap and scrape and find it on your own, saying, oh, why don't you tell me you had homework? Why don't you tell me you had a case study? Because these kids get wrapped up into their lives a lot of times and they forget to say things. So really important that you are here and trying to do the things that you need to do. That's the thing. Parent involvement is very key. So made me think about, you know, what if the schools were still segregated? Would that make a difference? And if schools were still segregated completely, if they had it where Brown versus Board of Education existed for a period of time, but now we go back to the old ways where it was pre-Brown, would that help? And there is a possibility that resegregating the schools would help. One, it would eliminate money spent and lost on busing. If the children can go back to schools in their communities, then what that does, it reduces busing. Kids can walk to class, kids can walk to the place of education in order to pursue their education without any type of disparity or fighting on that level. Number two, if the schools were segregated, that means that there has to be some provisions provided to make sure that these teachers are being compensated well and these teachers are actively able to teach the children. Both Zora Neale Hurston and W.E.B. Du Bois were against the Brown versus Board of Education indirectly. Of course, W.E.B. Du Bois, he wasn't around, or he was at an older age at the time of Brown versus Board of Education. But what he felt is that if that law passed, or if a law similar to that passed, then what that is doing, that it's showing that our schools are inferior, showing that our teachers are inferior, showing that there is no way that African-American teachers going to teaching out of inadequate books in small schools can make successful educators or successful lawyers or successful doctors. Well, if you look at it, there are plenty of those who pursued their education and of those who were successful based on the amount of care and quality that African-American teachers were providing. Now, this is a little difficult now because of the influx of immigration. However, CUNY is a great possible way to provide individual schools, have African-only school, have a Latin-only school, have a Asian-only school. These are done, and they're very successful. But it takes a lot to really pursue that, and that's why people shy away from it. Once again, this is The Rise TV Show, Blog Talk Radio, Toyland Productions, Toyland Entertainment. Please let me know what you think about this, 347-850-1228, so that way we can get your opinions on the matter. So we talked about New York being the most segregated state. We talked about ways to resolve this, but will anything actually be done? Common Core curriculum is supposed to be that way to bridge that gap, but the gap is increasing. The gap is increasing between Caucasian students and African-American students. The gap is increasing between discipline and suspension between Caucasians and African-Americans. And all that leads to is a large conglomerate of penal students. And that's what I call them, because they were students, they were active, they were trying to be successful, but they were caught up in that system, that prison system. And now there are children in jail that may not have been on that path if they had proper education. So the moral of this here, of what Brown can do for us, Brown can open up our eyes to not depend on the government, to not depend on a ruling by law in order to wake our eyes up and say, hey, we have to do something on our own. We have to do something for our communities. We have to do something for the people in our lives. And that's what Brown is doing for us. But what are we doing? We're sitting down and we're doing nothing. We're allowing public schools to deny our African-American children. The University of Michigan, before the case that they brought to the Supreme Court, had an African-American population of 7%. Now, going into the 2014-2015 school year, 3.8%, plus 4% of the African-American students, based on statements that were made by the University of Michigan. That is showing you something right there. On a positive note, maybe there might be a protest. On a negative note, that shows that the students are just trying to get on TV and try to protest, but they're not doing it for real, and they're not providing an opportunity for the school. And that's the wrong way to go about it. Don't go about it showboating a grand thing, saying that we want to stand here until the door opens. That's fine. But it's not effective anymore. It's not going to be effective unless it's on a broader, larger scale. So, once again, thank you for listening to this show. I hope you learned a little bit about Brown versus Board of Education, about Plessy versus Ferguson, about the case in Massachusetts with Sarah Roberts. Hope you understand that there's more to it, more to Brown versus Board of Education than just integrating schools. It's about having access. It's about having a say. It's about having a voice. However, we have not exercised that voice, that say, that reason, because we're caught up in our own world. So take this time to reflect on educational aspects of what your kids are doing. If you do that and you teach them at home in a way that they understand what's going on, maybe even before they get into the classroom, but they show that you care, that is the most important way to talk about Brown versus Board of Education and how it's important to you, what Brown did for you. Brown should be a mobilizer. Brown should be a way to fight injustices. So if Brown can do that for us, we have to step up now and take it to another level to make sure that we are representing what Thurgood Marshall fought for, representing what Dr. King fought for. And if we do that, then it'll be a much better place, much better community. So thank you once again. A little bit of note, side notes, every Friday night, 11 o'clock, we have Love Talk. Man, Doug Love will come on, give some insight. We have fun with it. And we also talk about something called the Case of X, where you can submit your stories. And if they get on the air, then we have something special for you. So once again, you can email me at tqmindbyrod@gmail.com. You can inbox me at facebook.com/tqmind. There's a lot of different ways to get in touch with me, so definitely want to see what people think about these topics. And then, of course, we'll be back next week as well. We have some big topics going on. We're going to hit the hot topics, the hot stories. Might not be a direction of where we're going to go, what direction to go, but we're going to talk about some hot stories that are going on right now, important current events, to make sure that we're up on the same page and to see what people think about these particular topics. So, once again, we are sponsored by Tranquil Mind by Rod Massage and Wellness. Anybody that's interested in getting a massage, take advantage of these specials that we have right now, 240-382-4733 at facebook.com/tqmind or tqmind.gr8.com. Once again, tqmindbyrod.gr8.com. So, as always, I'm your host, Mr. Rod Stevie. This is the Rod Stevie Show, Blog Talk Radio, Toyland Productions, Toyland Entertainment. And until next time, we will talk. I'll see you later.
Self-respect, intellect, increasing our knowledge to keep ourselves in check. How to deal with